Tonight's again, the questions at the end are more personal questions, and we won't delve into them too deeply unless you want to cause a marital fight. That's all right, but we'll worry about that when we get there. All right, just a couple of things here as we look at the start here. He talks about effective communication and gives us several different tips on that, seven different tips here. First of all, the importance of listening. As I went through all these things, you know, I thought, you know, it's really, really helpful. You know, this one on listening, it's amazing how many times, maybe it's a man thing, I don't know, but we don't listen like we should. And we hear it, but we don't really focus on it and don't pay attention to what we just heard. And as a result, we didn't hear much, and then we get ourselves into trouble. But, you know, communication really is important that we listen. And there, that verse there in Proverbs 18:13, he that answereth a matter before he heareth it is folly and shame unto him. And that goes hand in hand with one of the other ones we'll see a little bit later on, where he talks about being slow to speak. You know, that goes hand in hand with that. And that's an issue that, you know, I don't know about you, but that's one that I struggle with. I tend to open my mouth and say things right away instead of thinking carefully, and that's not a good idea. But I get myself into a lot of trouble that way. So, any other thoughts on this, the aspect of listening, something that maybe came to your mind that would be a help to the rest of us? Yeah. Importance of listening. Okay, then.
I'll say something, but then I'll be breaking my own rule. I'm just going to say, I've been trying to train myself over many years to listen better and to speak more slowly, I mean, less quickly. Sort of an art, it's for most of us, isn't it?
I can believe that. It does take definite work. And, you know, even in answering emails, sometimes, I mean, Melody will wait for 3 or 4 days before she answers an email. I want to answer it in 3 or 4 minutes. And then I end up sometimes saying things I shouldn't say. So, yeah, it's important for us to just be patient. And something, like Peter said, you got to work at it. And that's one of the things that I've definitely got to work on. Next one's minimizing your words. That knowledge spareth his words. Even a fool that holdeth his peace is counted wise. So the importance of not saying too much. You know, the scriptures tell us that in the multitude of words there lacketh not sin. The idea that the more you say, the more you're going to get yourself into trouble. So a lot of times we're better off not saying too much. And especially when there's a debate going on or something, you know, the bit of a argument is brewing, the less we say, a lot of times we'll keep things more calm than if we say too much and get ourselves into trouble. So, any thoughts on that one? Okay, the next one there, speak the truth. This one ought to be something we would automatically do, but I suppose there's people that grew up maybe much of their lives unsaved and had bad habits of lying. But if you've grown up in a situation where you told a lot of lies, and this is probably a struggle with you. But it should not be an issue in our marriages and our communication. We ought to be able to tell the truth, be honest, not only with ourselves, but also with our spouse. And not lie, not exaggerate, not embellish things to make it sound different than it really was. We need to keep the truth there. And then we need to honor our wife and reverence our husband. The two verses there, 1 Peter 3:7, address to husbands that we're to get to know our wife and to treat her with honor. And there in Ephesians 5, actually addresses both husband and wife, but it's there that he tells the wife to reverence her husband. And so these two ideas here, you know, we all know that it's important that we esteem our spouse or lift them up or respect them, show each other respect, and that's an important thing for us to do. But sometimes we don't always do that. It's interesting that the author here notes that the last sentence there in number 4, that the more respect you show to each other, the more your children will be inclined to show respect, show the same respect. And, you know, that's got a lot of truth in it. You know, if we aren't careful, then our children are going to pick up that. And they're going to be disrespectful. And I think it's one of the reasons why we live in an age where there's so much disrespect among the young people. They're just so disrespectful in so many ways and with no shame about it because they see it so much at home. And then ruling our spirit, we've spent quite a bit of time on that in the past. But we need to work at ruling our spirit, not letting our emotions rule us, but to control our emotions and how we respond to things. And he says there that if that begins to happen, we need to stop and admit that we're becoming emotional or that we're too emotional to continue to at that point. Yeah, and that's really good advice. You know, and it's not really easy to admit that, but if we can sense in our heart that, you know, we're having a conversation and things are starting to get a bit heated and we're starting to get a bit irritated, we're better off just saying, you know, I think we need to just, I need to spend some time just calming down. I'm starting to get riled up and I don't want that. And that'd be a good idea in a situation like that to keep ourselves from doing things we shouldn't say. And this little acronym he's got at the bottom here for HALT, H-A-L-T, that is really good counsel. He says, never seriously discuss something when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And that is absolutely true. If we're hungry, we're irritated, and we don't really want to think right. If we're angry, of course, that's going to hinder. If we're lonely, just feeling that sense of loneliness, it's not a good time to be communicating about things, or if we're tired. And the being tired can get us into a lot of trouble. You know, in a lot of ways, we're more prone to give in to things because we're tired. And so we need to be real careful. Any thoughts on that little, on that acronym or any of that aspect before we move on?
Includes sometimes having those conversations even though you are hungry, tired, lonely, or...
Well, yes, there may be times you do need to do that. But I guess what he's saying here is that in a general sense, most of the time, for example, I have found Melody's one of these kind of people that when she gets hungry, she gets hungry. And it's right now, and drop everything else, and she's hungry. All right, and if I try to talk to her about something, she says, "I can't talk to you right now. I got to eat." And
you know.
Yeah, so maybe some of the rest of you can sympathize with that. But you know, and that is true. I mean, if I insisted on talking, I mean, obviously, if there was some emergency or something, obviously, you got to do what you got to do. But if it can wait. Usually it is better to wait. But there may be times, like you said, when there's something that really needs to be dealt with. This isn't a hard and fast rule. It's just a good... It's probably more the idea of you're preparing, you've got this something you need to talk about, and you know it's going to be touchy. It's going to be one of those things that we don't really agree on very well. And so choose a time when you're not hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. And we have a better time to do it.
It's almost okay. Like... when you're hungry and you want to go shopping.
That's not a good idea either.
That's actually a good point, I think. It mucks up the whole acronym, but when you're aggravated or distressed by something else, by another issue, I know as a school teacher, always coming home sort of full of, not anger, but, you know, I'm really sort of...
tensed up, yeah.
Quiet.
Someone's been sort of getting at me, or I'm feeling disquieted, you know, sort of a not really.
I had to go to school once for a day. But yeah, I was very tired. More tired than the full day. Under pressure. Kids can be tired.
You know, when something's buzzing around in your head and sort of then a discussion issue comes up, it's not a good time to be launching into yet another discussion.
But that's kindergarten.
And you know, that same thing is true. You know, when you think about you're getting ready for bed or something, bad time to bring up something stressful, because then you're not going to be able to sleep, because if you have to deal with this stressful issue, and that's a difficult thing too. So yeah, good comments there. All right, then the next one, controlling anger, and obviously we know that that's very important. If we see the conversation drifting toward aggravation, then we need to just try to calm things down. And the scriptures are quite clear about that. Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger.
How do you become political?
He mentions a note here. Yeah. Could shut down, could become timid, might become political. Probably the idea of just not necessarily talking about politics, but to just
a political approach. Now, like, people can get, like, for example, like, they're just day-to-day things, but then they're, like stronger opinions that you kind of really fight for. Kind of like you're getting political about it.
Maybe like black and white, like cut emotions, maybe.
That makes sense.
Or even technical,
I would say. Yeah, like just maybe aggravating the situation. That's how I look at it.
But I guess if you think about Parliament time on TV. Well, what about you and the way you handle this thing and, you know, transferring blame and stuff like that.
Collective noun for a bunch of baboons. It's a parliament.
You know?
It's true.
It was in the French parliament.
I think sometimes like stuff normally comes up when you're tired or in one of those situations, because I think the devil also knows how to attack people, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's why we need to be vigilant and always be on guard, you know.
Yes.
Because normally when you're feeling good, stuff like that not coming up. It's only when you're tired or something.
Yes. And then he talks about number 7 here, watching your body language. And, you know, it is true that we can say a lot with our behavior and our actions. And he gives a verse here, Proverbs 20, verse 8, the king that sitteth on his throne judges and scatters away evil with his eyes. It's just the idea there that he doesn't necessarily even have to say something. You can tell a lot by just the way that he's looking, that you're in trouble if you don't watch it, that type of thing. So anyway, it is true that we a lot of times can convey ideas and thoughts just by our attitudes and our actions without even verbalizing it. Any other thoughts on that?
Speaking of Parliament, there was a few years ago, there was a parliamentary debate going on, and one of the women politicians just went, "Oh!" And the speaker said, "Could you just control your commentary on the side?" And she said, "I was only breathing." Just stuck in my mind that, you know, there are things you can do and say, and hand on hip, or things that communicate far more than they can do.
Yes. Dr. Ed Wheaton gives us 5 basic rules for communication. And everybody seems to have their own little ideas and slants on communication, but the things he mentions here are helpful. Never repeat something that has been shared with you privately. Give total enthusiastic attention and listen. All right, so there's that listening again. And then do not interrupt or jump to conclusions. And that's when we open our mouth too quickly. And acknowledge what you understand, even if you disagree. All right, so that's one we looked at another week, you know, about just, it. Yes, this is what I heard. I heard what you said, and make sure it was clear. And then be careful not to sound as if you are heaping blame. And that sometimes can be hard. You know, especially if deep down inside we feel like the other person is more to blame than we were, and that's usually the way we feel. It's hard not to convey that, but we do need to just be on guard and watch that so that we don't try to dump it over them. Why would that be? Why would that hinder our communication if we sound like we're blaming? Garrett?
Because it focuses more on the other person than yourself. And what that does is if both people think that way, you'll just keep staying in an argument until you eventually humble yourself and say, wait a minute, yeah, I was wrong too. You know? Otherwise, you'll just both keep trying to prove that you're right.
Yep.
And just keeps going.
Yep, exactly. All right, so heaping the blame on the other person just aggravates it and keeps it going. You're right. Okay, some basic communication guidelines. I don't know where this came from. I had it in my notes that I collected along the way somewhere. Love and truly value your spouse. We all would agree that that's important. Why would that have a bearing on our communication? Love and value your spouse. In what way would that?
Well, if we truly love them, we're not going to want to hurt them first.
Yeah. All right. Yep. Johnny?
I suppose if you also truly love somebody, you would also tell them the truth, even if you know they might not like the truth. In cases where it's legitimately, like, not if, I mean, like, they're just doing something obviously wrong.
Mm.
Like, where it's unquestionable.
Yep. Okay, so loving and truly valuing our spouse is very important because we're going to be more tender or more appropriate if we have that proper love. Then be trustworthy. And that's something that each of us has to work on ourselves, to be able to be trustworthy so that our spouse or whoever we're communicating with truly can trust us legitimately. And always be truthful. Even when it shames you, that's not always easy. Discuss everything with complete openness. You know, I have found over the years that I've counseled with people, a lot of people just don't discuss everything. And I hope in your marriage you discuss everything. I don't mean you got to talk about, every dinky little thing that you bought at the store and talk it over, but we should communicate about everything. We should, everything we do, our plans, our ideas, our thoughts, what we've been doing through the day, we need to communicate regularly and to be open. Then pray together daily, or more often if you can. Very, very important. Compliment and thank regularly. And again, that's very helpful and important. Share your heart and keep no secrets as teammates. That goes really hand in hand with discussing everything. But just being open and sharing our hearts and support decisions with no blame. You know, that sometimes can be hard. If you've had to make a decision and you make a decision and neither of you, you didn't have complete harmony on the decision, but it had to be made. And the scriptures tell us that the husband's responsible, so ultimately we've got to make a decision on it, and I'll make the decision whether we're really in harmony or not, because it's my job. And when that happens, or whether it happens to even be the other way around, we need to make sure that we support each other on it. We've made a decision together. It's our joint decision, and even though we don't want to come back and say, I told you. That's not a good thing to do. And I think we've probably learned the wrong way on that. We need to keep confidences. We've already seen that mentioned before. And treat as you want to be treated. And so good tips on communication here. This next section here, Wayne Mack, who's a counselor, he gives us there's quite a bit of scripture embedded in this. We've looked at a lot of the scriptures already. I'm not going to take the time to look at all these things. But I hope that as you went through this, and if you didn't do it yet, you need to do it for your own good, to go down through these and, mark a 3, 2, 1, or a 0 for excellent, good, fair, and poor after each one of these. In your own how you would evaluate yourself on these things. And it'd be a good idea, I haven't done this yet, but it'd be a good idea to sit down with your spouse and then share with each other these things and let each other know. And, you know, as I said earlier, I'm not going to ask you to tell me which one you put a zero on or a one or anything like that. But you need to do this for your own self. It'll be good for you and good for your relationship. But, you know, it's helpful for us to be willing to ask ourselves, you know, am I a ready listener? And do I listen like I should? And do not answer until another person has finished talking. And, you know, on mine, on this one here, I had to admit, I gave myself a 1 to a 2. I don't do very good on this. Now, a lot of times I don't listen well enough and I answer without thinking carefully. But evaluate your own in this. Slow to speak, you know, where you take your time before you answer. And I've already, these first two kind of are my biggest issues. I gave myself a 0 to a 1 on that one because I'm pretty terrible about speaking before I think. And, you know, so we need to evaluate that. Now, when we see these issues, obviously that means we got to work at it. And as Peter shared with us a moment ago, that, you know, how he's been just working diligently to try to control the speed of his response. And that's excellent. That's really good. And that's something that we all need to work at diligently instead of just saying, yeah, I got an issue here. I didn't claim you did, but at least you're working at it. You got a plan. Okay. Right. So the plan is the part that's important. You know, a lot of times if we don't even have a plan and we just say, yeah, I've got an issue there, but we don't have a plan to fix it, then we don't ever get around to fixing it. And then don't go to bed angry. I hope that all of you made that a firm commitment before you got married. And if you didn't, then you need to renew it and make it a firm commitment from this point on. That you solve your problems before you sleep. And didn't use silence to frustrate. You know, there's a temptation to do that, and sometimes it seems like maybe a reasonable way to resolve an issue, but it really doesn't solve anything. I mean, we could say, well, I was quiet instead of getting angry. But if you're silent and won't talk, you're not going to resolve anything either. So that's not really an answer. It may, you know, if you were to choose between that and blowing up in anger, perhaps the silence would be better, but it still doesn't resolve things and it doesn't help you with your communication. Do not become involved in quarrels. All right, so it's possible to disagree without quarreling. And that's a good idea. You know, if we're going to have a disagreement, to disagree without quarreling about it and accept the fact that not everybody has to think exactly like I think. And then do not respond in anger or uncontrolled anger there. And we need to have soft, kind words and tones. And when you're in the wrong, we need to admit it. You know, sometimes that can be really hard. And some people are more stubborn or proud about that than others. But that is an area where if we're stubborn about this and we just don't want to ever admit that we have failed or we have been wrong in an issue, that's going to cause problems regularly. So we need to work diligently at that. And then number 8, when someone confesses to you, tell him or her that you forgive them. And that's extremely important. And I think that, you know, as we communicate with each other, we need to regularly say, I was wrong, would you please forgive me? And then hear the expression come back, yes, I do forgive you. Then you can settle it and it can be resolved. But if you just say, I'm sorry, and you walk off and that's the end of the story and it's supposed to be okay, it really hasn't resolved the whole issue. Then avoid nagging. And it's not just women that nag. Sometimes men can nag too. But a lot of times us men, we bring it on ourselves because we don't do the things that we need to do, the little jobs. You know, faucet is still dripping, or that, you know, the thing's still broken. It's been broken for 3 weeks and you said you're going to fix it and you didn't fix it and it's driving me crazy. And You know, and so sometimes we're our own worst enemies there, but we need to work at that and try to. One of the things that we've found in our marriage that helps is to just write notes. Melody's a note writer. She's got scraps of notes all over the place. But the notes just, you know, this needs done, this needs done, this needs done. Let's tick them off when we get a chance to work at it. And that can be a help rather than just complaining about it. We make plans to do it. Any other thoughts or comments on these things? I'm not trying to push our way through them, but. Okay, number 10 here. Don't blame or criticize the other person. We need to instead restore and encourage and edify. You know, it's our sinful nature to blame and criticize when we don't agree with something or when we don't like something that's done. And then do not respond in the same manner as it came to you. You know, that's, you know, a lot of times we want to attack back if we've been attacked. And we need to be careful with that, because if we respond, then we are encouraging complications if we respond in a bad way. And try to understand the other person's opinion. These are really, really good things. And just ask yourself, how well do you do with that? Do you try to understand the other person's opinion? Make allowances for differences? And then the last one there, be concerned about the interests of the other person. All right, so these last two deal with empathy, putting yourself in the other shoes, thinking about the other person, how they respond, how they would feel in this situation. But very important. It reminds me of a verse that I was pondering in Proverbs this morning that said that talked about a poor man that speaks with entreaties or pleading, and the rich man speaks with fierceness. You know, the idea is the poor man speaking to the rich man, trying to get something to help him with his problems, and so he's entreating, he's talking gently and pleadingly, and the rich man, he doesn't have any respect for it, and he just kind of growls back at him in his own mean way. And, you know, one of the things we can learn from verses like that is that if we would turn it around, yes, he may be rich and this guy's poor. But what if it was the other way around? What if I was the one that was poor and he was the rich man? How would I want to respond? And turn that around to try to be a help to them. These fill-in-the-blanks down below are really more personal ones. And I encourage you to do it. I think it can be of help to you, especially if after you've done it on your own, then you sit down with your spouse and just work through it and compare your notes and see how you've evaluated each other, and then set up some goals to try to fix some of the issues. And that, you know, that's the only way we're going to improve our communication, is if we make plans and say, all right, we've got some issues here. These three things here are issues that we need to work on, or I need to work on, or you need to work on, whatever the case may be. And, you know, how are we going to do that? What are we going to do to be able to fix these things? And just try to come up with some ideas that can be of an encouragement and help to resolve that.